Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In this episode, Cancer Network's Tim Cortes spoke with Drs. Candace McGuire and Biscalia Monsiarez, both from VCU Massey Cancer Center, about the use of bioimpedance spectroscopy for detecting lymphedema. They discussed integrating this new modality into standard vitals workflows and detailed other considerations for improving long-term survivorship outcomes through proactive lymphatic care.
Briefly, to set the stage, can you explain what lymphedema is and why it's detected late, and then what it takes to manage its symptoms traditionally?
Absolutely. So lymphedema, if we want to break it down in the simplest of terms, is swelling of an extremity or swelling somewhere within the body. And that is due to lymphatic obstruction. Beyond the circulatory system, we have the lymphatic system that collects extracellular fluid from the body and then dumps it into the vascular system. Normally, it works incredibly well, but some patients, whether it's a primary lymphedema, meaning it happens just because and it's probably idiopathic, or it's due to some form of an injury, whether it's a lymph node dissection, radiation, anything along those lines, it obstructs the lymphatics. And wherever it obstructs those lymphatics, you're going to experience swelling within that limb. The reason it can be delayed is because it takes some time for those changes to occur. So especially when we're talking about lymphedema associated with breast cancer surgery, even something as small as a sentinel lymph node biopsy can cause some damage in that area. And then the additive effect of radiation can also cause some obstruction. And over time, that minute amount of obstruction will then cause symptoms. So for some patients, that will happen sooner, but many patients, it can happen months to years down the road.
Great, thank you. Okay, what clinical protocols has VCU Massey established to integrate this technology into the standard workflow in terms of when you take the measurements baseline and postoperatively?
It's a pretty well-established workflow that's been established through multiple clinical trials, and any of the companies that create these bioimpedance machines will help you establish that. But really what we want to do is get a measurement pre-op, because everyone's going to have a different baseline, you know, natural bioimpedance within their body. And so when a patient first presents to our clinic, we're going to evaluate them, decide what kind of surgery they're going to need. And if it's lymphatic surgery as part of their treatment or radiation to the lymphatics, then before that treatment, they will get a baseline measurement. They are then measured postoperatively, and then every 3 months for the first 3 years, every 6 months for the next 2 years, and then yearly thereafter. And that mimics the rapidity and the likelihood of developing lymphedema. It's a pretty easy process and can be done through a nursing visit. So despite the fact that it's fairly frequent within those first 3 years, patients are not having a medical visit attached to that and a copay attached to that. It's really just going to be that measurement.
Notably, these readings are taken alongside standard vitals now. So how has this streamlined the approach of and impacted the patient experience? And then what training is required for the different clinicians to help provide this to better integrate this into your systems?
Yeah, so it's integrated thus far pretty seamlessly into our standard vitals measurement system. The surgeon or the treating physician will enter an order, and when our medical assistants are checking patients in, they will see that that order is there, and the scale and our blood pressure machine are sitting right there, and then they just have to step over one and hop on the bioimpedance machine to have that measurement done. It adds about maybe 2 minutes to the check-in process. In terms of training, we did have some fairly extensive training for the medical assistants and the nurses who are really going to be managing a lot of the day-to-day of this. And then the physicians, we had a very simple sort of 30-minute webinar with some supporting documents that got them up and running. So it's been a pretty easy process to implement.
That's great to hear. Always love that. And then specifically for both of you, how has this, or do you anticipate it will change your workflow going forward?
I can start and then I'll hand it over to Dr. Monsiarez. I think for us in the short term, we're working out how this will be implemented. We may see a few more preoperative visits because patients are going to be strongly desirous of getting the measurement done. It does require pre-authorization. So if that can't be done that day, they may need to come back. But really what I see is it's simplifying the process of identifying lymphedema so that we don't have to wait for the patient to have symptoms, because at that point, it's largely irreversible. It's just manageable at that point. So it's really helping us identify things earlier and in a more streamlined and easy process rather than doing measurements with a tape measure or sending somebody to physical therapy. It's really going to help us have that alarm button way faster and way easier than we normally would, which is going to allow us to get them to occupational or physical therapy as soon as possible. And if they have persistent symptoms, to then get them to our plastic surgeons to talk about lymphedema surgery.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in as, one of the main providers here at VCU who does lymphedema surgery, including lymphedema surgery at the time of axillary lymphadenectomy with the goal of sort of preventing lymphedema from ever setting in. Lymphedema can be very subtle in its presentation, and having one more non-invasive method to quantify things and either provide reassurance to a patient that what is going on is not lymphedema, or to identify it and treat it, or just for me to get feedback on how are we doing in terms of the surgeries that I do and helping to improve lymphedema or prevent and so on and so forth. It's just a valuable tool for us, the providers, for our continuous learning and improvement of the care that we provide, also for us to help advise the patients of their risks and what's going on and so on.
Great, thank you. And then I know you just mentioned that it's hard to detect. So are there any specific patients that you expect this technology will benefit more at Massey?
I would suspect our patients who are still having full axillary lymph node dissections, those patients who are at extraordinarily high risk for lymphedema. Axillary lymph node dissection has been associated with as much as a 35 to 40% risk of lymphedema in some studies. When you partner that with radiation, it can go even higher. Now, we do preventative lymphovenous bypass to try to bring those numbers back down to hopefully as close to single digits as possible. But that's still going to be our patient population we'll be targeting the most with this technology because they're the ones who are most likely to benefit from it.
I agree. And I would just add that it's the patients with early stage lymphedema where it's more of a subtle difference if you were measuring the limb girth, and not these patients with the giant arms where we're trying to see do they have lymphedema, do they not have lymphedema? I think that's where it's valuable because there are, in addition to the preventative things that we do at the time of axillary lymphadenectomy, additional adjuncts that we could add. So identifying and monitoring disease progression can help us to add those adjuncts in an earlier fashion.
Great, thank you. As I was researching some of these questions, it came up that patients with higher BMI, it might be way harder to detect lymphedema in them. So is there any way this technology might have an added benefit for patients like those?
Absolutely. Not only do they have a higher risk of lymphedema at baseline, but it is more difficult to detect with things like measurements because their limbs may be a little bit larger at baseline. And I think in terms of symptoms, they're not going to visually notice a difference as easily as somebody who may have a slimmer arm at baseline. So I think not only because of their risk, but also with their difficulty in actually identifying early symptoms, that's going to be a patient population that very interested to study and see if they benefit from. I think that what's really great about our particular patient population is we see a lot of obesity. That's common everywhere, but I think that I'm excited most of all for those patients.
And I would add that we're in the South. We have a higher proportion of obese patients just due to the location of our practice. On the flip side of that, some lymphedema surgeons have BMI cutoffs that are fairly low. Like they'll cut off at body mass index of 30 or 35. I mean, that would cut out a significant fraction of our patients. And as you say, with obesity being a risk factor for a lymphedema, to sort of cut those patients out of the equation. From my standpoint, as long as it's safe to do the surgery, there's not a reason for us to cut them out. But if we include them, like Dr. McGuire was saying, we want to be able to have a more nuanced way to detect what's going on with them just due to the challenges of having an increased amount of subcutaneous fat that may be masking what's really going on.
Great, thank you so much. And then, what are some of the specific threshold triggers that might prompt a referral to therapy or surgery versus continued observation that you might find with lymphedema?
It's hard to really say what the threshold is. I think it's a difference of 0.59 or something like that. It's not like it's a centimeter difference or a seconds difference. It's a very specific number depending on which machine you're using. But the good thing about it is that the way that we've designed it is that it will alert in our electronic medical record system as an abnormal value. So we don't really need to remember what that number is. Not only will the printout sheet tell you that it's abnormal, but EMR is going to tell you it's abnormal and actually prompt you to do a referral. So we've kind of for lack of a better term, idiot-proofed it for our physicians, so they really don't have to watch out for a specific number. They just need to watch out for the alert.
That's great. Love it when it's simple. So
Yeah.
then, for both of you, can you please describe how the communication is between all the departments, or at least your two departments, regarding this technology and kind of when you get the readings and what might happen from there?
Again, a lot of this is going to be automated, but I think that the fantastic thing about our particular program is how collaboratively we work. We actually work to try to get patients at extraordinarily high risk for lymphedema, a prophylactic lymphovenous bypass. So I think that that communication has a lot to do with how we work together preoperatively and managing patients, managing their risk, figuring out who needs to have operations sooner than others, and who can wait so that they can have a joint a case. But I do think that we've got, again, everything is just avoiding Swiss cheese in big bureaucracies. And so not only do we have that human factor where we were all work together very closely and have each other on our cell phones, and when we have somebody with an abnormal value, we'll probably let somebody know verbally and through writing, but also through that electronic medical record safety net, where that alert will come up, and the alert will come up with an order set to consult physical therapy and plastic surgery if we think it's indicated. So it's a two-pronged approach. I don't think they've had anybody come up with too many abnormal values, thank goodness, thus far. So we haven't tested the process, but I can definitely let Dr. Monsieur talk about how that would be received on their end.
We have excellent communication in terms of referrals of patients, like Dr. McGuire was saying. So if we have patients who we think are high risk, I'll oftentimes be involved from the get-go and in consideration of doing a prophylactic immediate lymphovenous bypass to sort of try and reduce the risk or even prevent the onset of lymphedema. And then there's a lot of postoperative care that happens in those patients. We've got our lymphedema therapists on board. We've got Dr. McGuire's team. We've got myself. They'll also be following with their oncologist. And so from my standpoint, what I've always been doing is seeing them to sort of monitor how they're doing in terms of any breast reconstruction that I may have done, but also how they're doing in terms of their lymphedema treatment and their lymphedema care. And there are patients that I will see longitudinally for a long time and keep writing those prescriptions for them to keep going with therapy and so on and so forth. So I think for me, the LDECs, I'm just going to build into my progress notes of seeing those patients. And the nice thing about it being programmed in our system is, oh, hey, this is abnormal, is that it kind of falls under the same thing that happens when there's an abnormal blood pressure reading that one of our medical assistants can measure, and then say to whoever provider is seeing that patient that day, hey, this is abnormal. And then we can cascade it from there. So even if it's a patient that has sort of stopped following with me in plastic surgery, we can get them plugged back in. Or if it happens to be the rare patient that hasn't seen me at all, we can get them in and talk about options if the surgery side of lymphedema care is what is needed.
Great. And I think you might have just touched on this next question a little bit in your answer, but how do finding out about lymphedema earlier from bioimpedance spectroscopy, how does it influence the timing and the choice of surgical interventions that you might use on?
I tell all our patients that lymphedema is a progressive disease. We don't have a cure for it. So the more we can do to prevent its progression, the better the patients do functionally. So from my standpoint, that includes the preventative lymphovenous bypass in patients who need a full axillary lymphadenectomy. That also includes patients where we're suspicious that they may be developing lymphedema symptoms or are at risk, even after, for instance, a sentinel node biopsy, getting them into therapy. The gold standard is that they see a lymphedema therapist and maximize all sides of conservative therapy before we would try to do something like a lymphovenous bypass to treat lymphedema. And the reason for that is that that procedure in and of itself, or even transfer of lymph nodes to the site to treat lymphedema, in and of themselves, those surgical techniques are inadequate. The patient is always going to need lifelong conservative care. So if they aren't already maxed out from a conservative care standpoint, their insurance is unlikely to approve. And I, the surgeon, am unlikely to think that it is a good idea for us to do surgery. Patients are looking for a quick fix, but unfortunately, this type of disease, lymphedema, there's no quick fix. Once it's there, it's a lifelong trying to kind of like stamp it down and keep it at bay.
Yeah, and I would just add one thing is that the only time at which we find lymphedema to be quote unquote curable is when it's detected at stage zero. And stage zero is when it's completely asymptomatic. And so the LDEX does, the biompedic spectroscopy does offer us the opportunity to find patients who are potentially curable, who may never need Dr. Monsiaris's interventions. They may be able to do a 12-week course of compression and massage therapy that could reverse their lymphedema. And we're hoping to find those patients at that point. But the reality is not everyone's going to be detected at stage zero. The grand majority are still going to be detected at least stage one when it's going to become a chronic disease. And so determining whether somebody needs local compressive therapy versus surgical therapy, that's when our physical therapists and our occupational therapists and their area level of expertise to know when to pull the trigger to get them in with a surgeon, that's when that's so important. And we're very lucky to work with excellent lymphedema therapists who sit right within our breast cancer program, not only just collaboratively, but physically sit in our breast cancer clinic so that they can raise alarm bells very quickly.
Great, thank you. Just in general for lymphedema care, are there any recent advances that you're looking forward to or awaiting that you think might help improve outcomes?
I think making the bioimpedance spectroscopy more accessible. Right now, it's something where a patient still needs to go to a physician's office. I think with these new scales we see people using at home, wouldn't it be fabulous if this were something a patient could do by themselves at home? I think that that would be the way to get most patients screened most efficiently and get them to the right people as soon as possible.
I would add from my standpoint that I think the physiologic surgeries that we offer for lymphedema are all still considered fairly new. So way back when, even as recent as 10 years ago when I was a resident, we were still relying heavily on things like liposuctioning of large limbs, the Charles procedure, which is a very morbid procedure where you basically take off all the skin and subcutaneous fat down to the person's fascia and then skin graft the skin to the fascia, which gives its own deformity and its own set of difficulties to the patient. So now we've moved to lymphovenous bypass. We've moved to let's do lymphovenous bypass to try and even prevent lymphedema. Let's do free tissue transfer that includes lymph nodes to move lymph nodes to the site of where the lymph nodes were removed, or even in some cases, right onto the extremity in the site where we think that the blockage is based on our mapping of the lymph flow. So these are all things that within the past 5 to 6 years have gained frequency and traction, but are still only offered at major cancer centers. And I think we're privileged that Dr. McGuire and I have a great team and that I have the equipment. And now we've got the SOZO added to that, that we're able to provide these things for our patients. And from my standpoint, some of these patients appear to me, and by measurements and everything else, to have been cured of their lymphedema after these interventions. I think getting an LDEX score on them with SOZO, this is just another way to demonstrate, did we really bring them to stage zero or no lymphedema, or did we just bring them so far down? I think the cutoff for LDEX that Candace was alluding to is usually around 6.5. So did we bring them to a 7, or did we actually bring them down below 6.5 and they really don't have lymphedema anymore? I think that would just be interesting to know and helpful in counseling them of where do we go next? What other things do we need to do? Do we need to think about further surgeries? Sometimes these surgeries, you don't do one or the other, you do both, or you do multiple lymphovenous bypasses at multiple different levels. And sort of that clinical decision making, this type of a technology really helps us to finesse. And I always tell the patients can do and should do are two different things. And so I'm trying to do the things that we should do and not just do things just because we can do them.
Great. Really, thank you for all that input. And then finally, does anyone have any closing thoughts or anything that I didn't prompt about that you'd like to say about this, integrating this new technology?
My thought is that this is something that you can do and should do. If you see a lot of patients where you're still doing a lot of lymph node surgery, I think we all have patients that we never expected to develop lymphedema who now have it. And the ability to detect it early and either potentially cure it or make it extremely treatable and not affect the patient's quality of life is extremely important. And so looking at these systems and how we can use them to benefit patients is incredible.
I agree. I think it's a wonderful addition to our program. And I think it's just it's something that more people out there should consider if they're not already considering as one more tool to detect things and catch this early. Like Dr. McGuire said, if they're at stage zero, we might even be able to reverse this. If they're at stage one, we want to keep them at stage one. We don't want them progressing to more deformity, discomfort, risk of infection, and so on.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.